welcome to the Butts and Seats Podcast, episode number 101.
How long until you forget the numbers this time around?
I mean, we do it every episode now. I also usually check, but...
I don't know. Because we're building up to 100, I feel like you're going to forget now that we're past 100.
Although this is actually episode,
like, is this 103,
what, 113 total? Or...
Yeah, see, now you're confusing yourself. You're ruining it.
I'm Nick, alongside Emily.
Here to tell him that he's ruining things.
Emily, what is it we normally do here?
We take a week-by-week look at the slow but inevitable downfall of WCW through the late 90s and the early 2000s.
And what is it we're doing here today?
Not that.
Today we're here to talk about a bird.
Hell yeah. We're here to talk about a bird. We're talking about another bird, a couple other animals, and mostly just vibes.
So if somehow you clicked on this episode or started auto-playing and you didn't hear the opening theme song... Emily, what show have you picked for us to review today?
Arguably the best WrestleMania, and I will not be taking notes. We're talking about WrestleMania 9.
I think you need to take some notes.
Absolutely not. I enjoyed this far more than I should have.
Yes. Emily kept looking at me going, Nick, this isn't a bad show.
Yeah. It wasn't. I stand by. I enjoyed this thoroughly, and I'm very excited to talk about it because this was a lot of fun. I don't understand why everybody puts this in their top list of worst pay-per-views. We have watched worst pay-per-views on this show, on this podcast. This breath of fresh air. Fun, amazing, themed, everyone's having a good time. Why are we mad?
So, in reality, percentage-wise, how much of you picking the show was bird theme other things?
Like, picking it, about 80%.
80% bird and theme?
Yeah.
And then the other 20% was...
making you mad.
Okay. To be fair, that's almost like the sole reason I picked Sold Out for next episode.
There you go, see?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's 80% Great Inspector. 20% make Emily mad.
The problem is the Great Inspector stuff, I know I'm going to hate.
How can you say that?
Because, Emily, it's a horrendous segment.
It's hilarious.
No, it's a graphic.
We have watched it before. It's hilarious. That whole segment's hilarious.
We were pretty sure we said this previously, so...
And it comes out that we didn't. I'm going to be so mad at you.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we're recording this before episode 100 is actually out, so...
way to fact check.
Well, we're recording this shortly after my 30th birthday.
And we supposedly said on the last podcast that we're going to do a shot for episode 100, 101, and 102.
Yes. And probably Heroes of Wrestling, because it feels like it's part of that canon.
Yeah, we'll see.
We wouldn't need it after Heroes of Wrestling, but we're doing some birthday cake dough ball.
Happy 30th, Nick. Do you feel old?
Yes.
Nah.
I am still younger than this show, though, so.
Yeah, because you were born in 94. This is 93.
Yeah, but cheers.
If we must. Cheers.
It really just tastes like somebody ground up sprinkles and threw it into whiskey.
No, it tastes like you're doing a shot of syrup that you put into a, like, latte. Because that stuff does taste kind of alcoholic because it is so concentrated.
Yeah, I get that.
This just tastes like syrup. Ugh. Ugh, ugh, ugh. And you know what people don't do? Drink syrup.
So, Emily, I did try to look up backstage notes. There wasn't much of note going on around this time, admittedly. The weird coincidence of our episode 99, episode 100, episode 101... Mark Marrow has just signed with WCW timeline. In 93, it's like, what the fuck? So.
That's weird.
I think he's firmly in WWE in 97 for the next show. So I don't think he'll have anything happening, but maybe
we'll
not.
We'll see. We'll figure it. Well, there'll be something.
I think he signed when he was hurt. So maybe he's like making his debut around then for
That's
all we know.
That's so weird.
But as Emily said today, we're here to talk about WrestleMania 9. We are live from Caesar's Palace's parking lot in Las Vegas, except not actually Las Vegas, apparently. Apparently it's in Paradise, Nevada, which is like a suburb of Las Vegas.
Is Caesar's Palace not in
Vegas? Maybe not.
It's not on the strip?
I thought on the strip. This is by the airport. It's right by Buffalo Wild Wings.
I don't think that Buffalo Wild Wings was there when this was shot. That's really strange. I've never been to Vegas, so I can't not.
I mean, it's right by the Mirage, so I guess that's just... I don't know. I don't understand.
The Mirage was on the strip, too.
Yeah, I don't know Vegas geography, apparently.
Well, neither of us have been there, so.
I've been there once for 3 hours when I was 18.
So you could not partake in Vegas.
Yeah. We went to Serendipity 3, and we were texted in the middle of Caesar's Palace saying, your table is ready. You have 3 minutes to get here.
We're Jesus. Like, ah! Run.
We didn't know where to run, though. So the show took place on April 4th, 1993. And do you want to take any guess on the attendance for this show? Because it is a very weird setup.
I'm assuming it's lower than like a normal WrestleMania because of the weird like riser setup.
Well, the amount of attendance for WrestleManias around this time is very weird because they alternate, you know, basketball arenas and big stadium shows. So,
what's the attendance at like an MSG?
20,000.
I feel like it's less than that.
It's actually weirdly close. It's 16,891.
Okay.
I thought it was going to be way lower. Like, oh, shit.
Yeah, it didn't seem grandiose, like, for seating-wise.
Yeah, last year's WrestleMania did 62,000.
Okay. In attendance.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the pay-per-view buys, I will not make you guess because you have no sense of context. It did 430,000 buys, which is very middle of the road for, like, the nine that had happened by then.
Okay. That seems like a big number.
It's up a little bit from last year, and next year is a little bit down.
Okay.
But I think it's literally like fourth or fifth place of all of them that happened so far.
Okay.
So Emily, I guess let's get into this show.
Let's go, because the intro is the best part. Spoiler, the intro is my best bit.
Gorilla Monsoon welcomes us to the largest toga party in the world.
Why do they do a host for WrestleMania?
Well, this is... Hey, Gorilla, we're kicking you off commentary, but here's a little something, I guess, to get
He's
a payday
the
or whatever.
Host. It's stupid.
Yeah. Vince McMahon, like screams a little opening video package, and that's it for him.
We never see his face.
Yeah.
He's never actually on camera, which I was kind of jarred by. I really, like, I don't know where I expect him to be, I guess, on commentary, but hearing his voice and then nothing was bizarre.
He constantly jumps in and out of doing stuff. It's really weird to figure out. Why he decided to do certain things.
Yeah. The commentary team on this, I think, was left for the better.
Well, yes. Because Gorilla Monsoon introduces us to his predecessor, Forrest or otherwise. On his first night in the job, it's good old JR, Jim Ross.
Baby! He is such a baby!
JR hypes up the main event in the Hogan tag match later tonight and then throws to Finkus Maximus.
And they stick with that all night. And what we're not saying is everybody's in costume! Gorilla Monsoon is in costume. JR is in costume for his first night on the job. Fink is in costume, and he's about to introduce our, honorary guests of the night.
Which I realized they don't do anything with this.
And it's amazing, though. Everybody looks so in theme and great. They need to do this more often. This is fantastic.
They bring out Caesar and Cleopatra.
Yes.
And JR tried to keep kayfabe. See, this is Cleopatra, like, the ninth, who was... You know, heavily associated with Caesar. I'm like,
Nick, you're not selling this right. You're not selling this properly at all. You are ruining this intro. So, Finkus fucking Maximus. Howard Finkel, Finkus Maximus. First of all, we need to just like sit with that, because that is his name for the evening. He's in his full ancient Roman garb, ancient Egypt, whatever they're going for. I can't decide if they're doing ancient Roman or ancient Egyptian. He introduces Cleopatra and Caesar out into the ring. They come out on an elephant. They're on an elephant. The elephant does a fucking trick as Cleopatra and Caesar come off of it. Like, I am sold. If I wasn't sold already, I am fucking sold when the elephant does a goddamn trip. I am so in. I don't care what happens on this show. It doesn't even matter. Because the next thing that fucking happens is one of our commentators, Randy fucking Savage, he also comes to the ring. He's also dressed to the nines, but not just as he dressed to the nines. He is lounging on a gold chaise, being lifted and transported by four hunky men, also in ancient Egyptian Roman garb, whichever you decide that this is, with a llama escorting him ahead of the chaise. A llama comes out, and then you see Randy Savage in the whole outfit with the guys being carried out. He's also with four Vestal Virgins, which is a whole thing. Four women are just accompanying him next to the chaise, feeding him grapes and fruit. He is living the lap of luxury of the Roman ancient times. It is fucking perfect, because then, I'm not even done. We're not done. Then our third commentator, Bobby Heenan, the fucking professional he is, we love him, he comes out. He's riding on a camel, backwards because he's silly, goofy mood. But he's on a camel, and not only is he on a camel, there is an ostrich in front of the camel, escorting the camel out that is holding Bobby Heenan, who is also in costume.
There was also a bird. I don't think it's the same bird from later, but there was.
There is a bird. You are correct. But I mean, if you're not sold in the show, like, come on.
And Bobby flops getting off the camel.
I can't imagine a better introduction to a pay-per-view. I have never been more enthralled in the first 5 minutes of a show than I was with this. This is it. This, I'm sold. You have my money. I will give you extra money. I don't even care what happens in this show. Yokozuna who? This is what I want.
WrestleMania 17, you're going to be like, that's a 9 out of 10.
There boring as fuck. There are no ostriches. There's no camel. Boring. This is what I want. I tell you what I want in wrestling. I want this. I don't give a shit about in-ring work. I don't care about matches. I don't care about quality. I want this.
Jesus Christ. I think we just called an episode there. I think,
you can guess what my best bet was. I am obsessed at this point. I am so sold. I've said it already. It literally does not matter what happens in the show. I am so sold. Take all of my money. I am subscribing to the WWE Network for the rest of my life. If this is what you're going to give me, love it.
I think the only thing that took you a little bit out of it was commentary starts conversing and you got a sense of what Macho Man Randy Savage's commentary for the night was going to be.
Yeah, Randy doesn't really know how to talk, and JR is still so brand new that he doesn't want to fuck it up. Yeah. So he's trying to match everybody else's energy, but still be professional. And then there's Bobby.
I didn't take too many Randy notes, but here he does, lock and load, do the thing if you got the guts.
Yeah, nothing he says actually makes any grammatical sense. No. But he came out escorted by a llama. Who cares?
It is weird that The first match has fairly subdued entrances, which considering who's in it.
Well, they were probably trying to get the animals back, and they didn't want to risk having, you know, passing action.
Because our first actual match of the evening
doesn't even matter who.
Oh, they say evening. It's midday.
Yeah, okay, you looked up the start time of this. It was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
It was 3:45. I don't know whether that's Eastern time or Pacific time. But our first match is the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels, with Luna Vachon.
Yeah, can you explain that pairing?
No.
Okay.
Versus Tatanka.
Tatanka.
Buffalo. With Sensational Sherry. This match is for the Intercontinental title.
Sensational Sherry looks great. The women look great.
Yes.
Even Luna, as wild as she looks great.
You know, admittedly, I'm not sure if this was one of the many times where it was meant to be Shawn Michaels versus Marty Jannetty, and then he went and got himself fired.
Well.
I think that happens later in this year, or at least maybe set up once later in this year, but it constantly gets started and then stops and then started and stops.
I mean, I don't really think that that would have necessarily mattered in the quality of the match. I don't know.
Well, Tatanka is undefeated on television at this point, which is a fact they don't really bring up on commentary.
Were you really listening to commentary, though?
A little bit.
I already wasn't.
Listen, we are one pay-per-view away from best commentary performances for a match ever, which is at the next pay-per-view, King of the Ring. Tatanka is in a match that has a time limit. And half the match is just Bobby Heenan talking about how Tatanka measures time in moons and how many percents of a moon 15 minutes is.
What?
I don't know, man.
Interesting.
So, two competitors chain wrestle to start. Tatanka overpowers Sean. Back suplex to Sean. Sean tries for a diving crossbody, but Tatanka counters with an arm drag. And I almost have the opposite problem now where I keep wanting to type Tanaka. As in Masato Tanaka. Yeah. It used to be the flip side. And I'm like, no.
You were right, Tatanka. Wow. Yeah.
We get the Shawn turnbuckle spot and elbow to the floor. And I'm like, God, it's kind of funny that Shawn and Triple H both have their little Ric Flair tribute in their matches.
Where is Ric Flair at this time?
He actually would have just left WWF.
Okay. Because there was a point in the show where there were chops and nobody wooed. So I was like,
I think it was as much of a thing then. But he literally would have left in January.
Okay.
Yes, because they film a Loser Leaves Town match, and they film it before the Royal Rumble, which Ric Flair is in, and Flair loses. So it doesn't air till after. It's like, yeah. It's fine.
Okay.
Shawn gets elbowed to the floor, and then we get Sherry and Luna staring each other down outside. Tatanka keeps knocking Shawn off the apron until a poke to the eye, and Shawn hits a very sloppy diving sunset flip. It's like, you kind of end up like landing off to the side.
This is about the time where Randy Savage has the excellent line of commentary. Tatanka is just doing his thing. That's all.
So, I guess there's only so many points to actually kind of naturally bring it up. Randy Savage is not wrestling on this card, and it's kind of a travesty.
Is it?
I think so.
I don't know that I would call it a travesty. He's still here.
He should be wrestling. He's a good wrestler.
Who would he wrestle?
Bret Hart.
That's not the story, though.
That's a better main event.
But it's not the story.
I don't know. Have him face Razor.
Maybe.
But
I don't know. I did not see Randy not wrestling as a travesty.
Yeah, we're in the era of WrestleMania 7. He got retired. Emily, would you believe it? He became the world champion at WrestleMania 8.
Shocking.
And he's been on and off wrestling and commentary. Like, he was in the Rumble. So,
well,
Vince is like, no, you're too old. You can't wrestle anymore. And then he goes to wrestle for another 6 years in WCW.
It's not too old.
Yeah, remember that from the main event. Randy's too old.
Yeah. I didn't even think about him not being on the card. Was not even a thought that crossed my mind.
Tatanka Truck hits a running DDT.
Tatanka Truck?
Yeah.
Jesus.
It's a running DDT. It starts working over the shoulder. I can't have parsley. I can have Tonka Truck.
Tatanka Truck. If you're going to do it right.
Sean tries for a clothesline but hurts his shoulder. And Sean crashes hard into the turnbuckle. And then flops backwards. It was like, okay, he's fine.
Yeah. We were both kind of like, ooh, but yeah, the fact that he did the flop, I was like, oh, you're completely fine.
Tatanka hits a shoulder breaker, an elbow drop, and then a diving tomahawk chop.
Oh, we did establish that Tatanka does have Native American roots.
Yes.
He is not culturally appropriating.
Not to be confused with his very clearly dyed roots.
He is Native American. So it's not as bad as it could be.
Yes, it's not Chief J. Strongbow, an Italian man, being like, yeah.
Exactly.
How? Tatanka goes for a second tomahawk chop, and Shawn Michaels counters the dive with a super kick, and it's like a nothing spot. I'm like, that's Sweet Chicken Music.
Yeah, yeah, you even called. I was like, oh my God, he doesn't even have Sweet Chicken Music yet.
No one reacts. Like,
no, it was nothing.
I think he has like the teardrop suplex as his finisher here.
Baby. Everybody's so baby here.
Sherry and Luna shout at each other some more. Diving clothesline from the apron from Shawn, and he hits a swinging neck breaker in the ring. Sean hits a drop kick and then locks in a rest hold and then hits a modified victory roll. I have no clue what he was actually going for here because it was just like, well, moving on.
Yeah, I don't even know what you're talking about.
Tatanka hits an electric chair drop and then misses a follow-up elbow drop. Sean hits a diving axe handle and Tatanka hulks up and starts to come back, including like the point. I'm like, Jesus.
Yeah, he is just hulking up.
Tatanka hits a diving crossbody, only gets a two. They both roll each other out for near falls, and Tatanka counters a dive with a power slam in a spot we'll get a couple times tonight.
Yeah.
We get a Sherry chant breaking out as both men crash to the floor.
That was really confusing to me because she wasn't doing anything. Was this match just that boring?
No, I think you're just so ingrained of smarky prick crowds. This is just like, hey, she's there. We like her.
But they're not paying attention to what's in the ring. They're not chanting for anything that's actually happening in the match. They're just chanting for the woman who is standing idly ringside.
I don't know.
It was very weird.
So both men crash to the floor, and the ref starts counting. Sean pulls the ref out of the ring and then goes back in. Tatanka hits his finisher called the end of the trail. Oh, God. And the ref goes down to count the pin, but then taps Tatanka, and it's like, nope, he lost by count out.
Yeah, the ending of this was really strange.
So I like rewound it, and like you can't hear the ref at all, but you kind of see him go... He's about to go 10 as Sean pulls him out of the ring.
So that does sort of count as a count out.
Yeah, because he'd be counted out for the 10 count.
Okay.
Because I thought it would be, that's a DQ. That's what made sense to me.
Mm.
So Tatanka wins the match, but not the title. Sean goes to the back. Luna scoop slams Sherry out of her shoes on the floor. And then Tatanka helps her to the back. What were your thoughts on this match?
It was too long. It was kind of boring. It was strange.
It was a little too long.
It was strange to see Shawn Michaels in an opening match. And not be lauded. Like, the opening match of a WrestleMania should not have somebody of Shawn Michaels' caliber. But because he's such a baby, it makes more... Like, it's like seeing The Rock in an opening match. It's weird.
I think nowadays, they definitely try to have the first match, like, punch a little more. But, like, it should be this big upbeat match. I mean, based on this, I'd say it's this or the next match that would make sense. But, I mean, sort out the finishes before you're going to... assign the first match.
If the first match is supposed to set the energy of the show, and this was too low energy to be the main or to be the draw for the show. This was too low energy. This was boring to me. Again, I'm not here for the wrestling.
I can't help it. That's the most
I'm not here for the wrestling.
Yeah, Sean being in a mediocre opening match was definitely strange.
Maybe, like, yeah, it was the fact that it was mediocre too.
Yeah. Like, what the hell was the finish? Like, they needed something to be more obvious. Like, this, sometimes you can criticize people for, like, playing to, like, row Z. They didn't even play to row one here. Like, what the fuck?
No, I don't criticize for that. Like, it needs to be
some
obvious.
People could. Like, no. the overacting.
No, I think it's needed, especially in a show like this that doesn't have Jumbotrons. You need to play to the back row. So you're right. It wasn't obvious enough. So it was kind of confusing.
Didn't help that the ref, like, went down, like, and then tapped him. Nope, sorry, yeah, bud.
I feel like the ref might have even forgotten how the match ended.
Let's go backstage. It's Mean Gene, who did not get a fun name, did he?
No, but he got a cool costume. He's fine.
Come on, Meanest Genus?
No, I think Finkus Maximus having the name is perfect.
Meanest Genus is like a step away from Biggest Dickus.
If you
come
do
on.
Too many people with nicknames, it ruins the fun. Finkus Maximus is perfect. Don't take that away from him.
But he's backstage with the Steiner brothers, the baby God, Steiner brothers.
Such babies. He hasn't even had sex yet. He doesn't even know he's the best at sex yet.
Yes, because they're like, we're going to do what we do best, wrestle. And you're like, no!
That's not what you do best!
But they're excited for their first WrestleMania.
Oh, they're so cute.
Might be their only one. In all honesty, I'm like...
So baby. So cute. So young.
Well, they're facing somebody else who looks very young in our next match. It's the head shrinkers of Fatu and Samu. And Samu with Afa versus the Steiner brothers. Yes, Fatu is Rikishi.
But this is not Rikishi. This is Jimmy and Jey Uso. Yeah. He looks spitting image. It's really cute, actually.
Scott and Fatu start lots of overpowering and pushing to start. The head shrinkers beat down Scott in the corner and dig out Rick for a second. The Steiners hit a double diving clothesline from the same corner. And we were like, this is not going to go well. And like,
no,
I know,
but
they actually hit it.
It worked.
Afa hits a double Naga knocker on the head shrinkers on the outside to hype them up. On commentary, Jim Ross notes that Luna Vachon has attacked Sensational Sherry backstage. It's like, oh, God.
Yeah, and apparently we'll like be getting updates on this throughout the night. Like, nobody really asked.
I want to say there's a Coliseum home exclusive that, like, they have a video of that, and it's pretty vicious looking.
Oh, well, I believe it. Luna's a little crazy.
Yeah, I kind of wish they had those VHS exclusives on, like, the network and Peacock.
Somewhere, yeah.
Like, those are just lost the time now.
Kind of. Whoever digitized them and put them on YouTube. Those are the only ones.
Scott hits a butterfly suplex, but is dropped all the way to the floor face first on like a, he goes for some sort of like dive and they pull the ropes down and he just crashes. Mm. And then he's hit with a kendo stick by Afa and like that, you hear that so loud.
Oh yeah, it's rough. I love a kendo stick though. Kendo sticks make the best noise.
Samu bites the face of Scott and then they hit an assisted headbutt. Fatu hits a backbreaker and a Brett's rope headbutt, spinning kick from Samu, and Fatu stops the tag from happening. Scott smashes Fatu's head into the mat, but it has no effect, and he pops back up and hits a sidekick. The headshrinkers then keep working over Scott. Scott powers up, but is unfortunately hit with a double clothesline. Samu tags in and works over Scott some more until a misdiving clothesline. Hot tag to the dog-faced gremlin, which...
They really lean into that.
JR just keeps calling him dog-face.
Do you think he doesn't know, or...
I don't know.
There was a point around this time, though, where you could see Samu in the background, like, holding the tag rope in his teeth, like, before he tags in. Did you see that at all?
Yes.
Yeah, I love that. It's, like, very character building.
Dogface hits Steiner lines, and then a double Naga knocker, but it has no effect, much like using Dragon Pulse on an all creamy.
There you go. A what? Ew. A fucking what?
It's like a whipped cream Pokemon.
Ew.
Fine, on a Xerneas.
That's not better.
On a Clefable.
Sure.
They double headbutt him and then hit like a double stroke before going for some sort of diving combo move. Rick is sitting on Samu's shoulders and counters the move into a power slam from the shoulders. Like, damn. It's a nice little spot.
That looks really cool.
Scott tags in, hits a belly to belly, but Fatu powers up. Scott hits a botched Frankensteiner to Samu and the Steiners win. It's like, oh,
yeah,
after
if
all that
had been cleaner, that would have been awesome.
This wasn't a bad match.
Rick on Fatu's shoulder was really cool, though.
Yeah.
Like, that whole move, that was awesome.
It was a little scary on the landing, but it still looked cool.
This was not a bad match. It was just long enough. It was really cool to see all these people so young.
This probably should have been the opener. I think
I agree. Yeah.
This was high energy enough to where, you know, and they were able to tag in and out when it's like, all right, it's getting a little stale, do that. But,
yeah.
I mean, you know, it's still, you know, out of five, this is a 2.5 or
but
a 3.
But it was fun.
Yeah. But this probably is the best match of the night.
You think?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Do you have something coming to mind?
I'm not here for the wrestling.
I'm aware of that. It was after this match where you said, like, I don't know, man. This seems like a pretty decent show. Mm-hmm. And then you, like, had an audible, oh, no, for the next interview segment.
Yeah.
It's Mean Gene with Doink the Clown.
Yeah.
It's heel Doink, though, so it's still good Doink.
It was a good Doink. I will give you that. It was entertaining.
Gene shows a clip of Dwayne Kidding Crush using a fake arm. And Vince made a commentary like, oh my God, he pulled his arm out of its socket. Like, it's a
when you
fake
see the
arm,
clip,
you dumb fuck.
The clip, you cannot even like pretend to think that that was a real arm.
He's swinging it with two hands. You can't.
No, I'm just saying that the arm that Dwayne had the actual, in the sling. Okay. Yeah. No, it looked so fake.
Yeah.
You cannot even be like, oh my God, that looks so real. How did he get me? Like, no, that's not. There's no way. I don't know. I know TVs weren't HD in 93, but like, come on.
But for the interview, in a telling line, Dwayne says that Crush may be seeing double vision by the end of the night.
Ooh.
So the match is Crush versus Dwayne the Clown. You refuse to believe that Crush was actually Hawaiian.
Yeah, we had to look up his heritage because like I did not believe he was Hawaiian. I thought it was, you know, one of those like stolen culture things. This big white man is, you know, definitely Hawaiian. He's just because he surfs.
And
Emily, he's actually Southern Californian.
I'll ask you again, what two groups have we seen Crush be a part of?
Technically
three.
I remember the two.
Okay.
The NWO Black and White.
He was the B team, but
that whatever. The B team. The Black and White B team. Whatever. They're wearing black and white. And Chronic.
Yes. Can you remember the third group?
No.
I think he actually wrestled in the match. When we reviewed WrestleMania 13, he was part of the Nation of Domination.
I don't think that counts. For things we've seen him in, one-off WrestleMania, I don't think that counts.
She says during the one-off WrestleMania review.
I'm not going to cite this as, oh, don't you remember when we saw him in this group? Like, I don't know.
The Crush chases Doink and scoop slams him on the floor.
Oh, all of that to say, Crush is actually from
Kona,
I think you said?
Yes.
Yeah, the Big Island, which is cool.
They should have called him that.
The Big Island? Yeah. No.
Doink begs off in the ring and just keeps trying to run away in kind of a messy spot of like being thrown back into the corner. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what it was. Crush hits a two-handed choke and then throws Doink back into the corner. Doink pulls Crush out and hits punches to very little effect. Crush beats down Doink in the ring, including a backbreaker. Doink grabs Crush's head and pulls him onto the rope, and then hits some very sloppy diving attacks.
I really kind of zoned out for this match.
Doink gets a pile driver and smashes Crush's head into the ring post. Doink goes for a very blatant flying nothing, and Crush gets the boot up. Crush then counters a dive with a power slam for the third time in this show. Doink then tries to go under the ring, but is stopped by Crush, and Crush hits a press slam in the ring.
So Doink goes for that spot more than once. I think he does it like twice or three times.
Yeah.
He doesn't come out with anything. He doesn't have a weapon. He doesn't have a chair. He doesn't even have like a like squirt bottle of water or anything. It's kind of annoying.
Well, it's setting up the finish.
Sure, but there's other ways to have done that where it wasn't such a nothing burger. Like if he had gone down and gotten like a weird little clown spray ball or something both times and then he did it for the finish, I think that would have been better.
Doink stops a head crush by getting to the ropes and then bumps the ref. Doink is then stopped and going to the ring again, and in the ring, Crush locks in the head Crush, and a second Doink appears. Doink, brah, brah.
Eat your heart out, Houdini.
He hits Crush with a fake arm a few times. They actually do the I'll hold him up and you hit him spot. I'm like, oh shit.
Yeah.
I was ready for he ducks. It's the one thing they didn't want to happen, but no.
No, it actually worked.
It was the thing they wanted to happen.
Lead up to a clown. They'll get it right.
The Doinks then do a fake mirror spot, and then Doink, like, weirdly after just pins Crush, like no additional move. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I mean, Doink wins. It was like a weirdly clean finish. Like, in terms of like, you didn't knock him out, you didn't distract the ref, like, not really.
A second guy came out and they hit him with a weapon. That's not a clean finish.
I don't know. It wasn't as fucky as like the starting match.
No, just because you understood what happened doesn't mean it's a clean finish.
I don't know. It didn't bother me. None of the endings bother me. You think this whole show is egregious because every ending is fucking horrible to you. We are going to disagree on that.
I literally think the Head Shrinkers Steiner Brothers match is the only match that actually has... No, sorry, two of them have a clean finish, and one of them ends under 2 minutes, so it feels weird.
We're going to disagree on whether or not that makes a match bad.
I don't think it makes a match bad.
You seem to.
I think when it's used repetitively, it makes the show drag. And
you told me that was one of your main citation sources of why this is such a bad WrestleMania. We're going to disagree then.
We'll talk about this more later. But yeah, Doink wins. A second official comes out to tell the ref about the second Doink, but they can't find him under the ring.
Magic. And I think that's when Bobby Heenan says, eat your heart out, Houdini.
There is a Coliseum home exclusive of Gene trying to figure out about the second Doink, and like it's very clear there are two. I think it like one like walks past him.
No.
Yeah, I mean like this was a flat actual finish, just in that you did the spot and then you delayed for like 45 seconds and then pinned him. It's like, have that just be the finish, or do an actual twin magic or something. Like, it just, it fell flat for that reason of, like, you, I guess you really knocked him out, because normally the long delay pin means they kick out.
Yeah, maybe they actually got him. Or maybe Crush was like, yeah, I'm done.
We then go into the crowd. Todd Pettengill is here to do a weird racist bit.
His name is Todd Pettengill?
Yeah.
I never got his name.
Yes.
It's like oddly racist. It's not overtly racist, but it's definitely racial undertones.
Yeah, he goes over to two Japanese tourists who have very large camera lenses, which is apparently a thing. And he goes over...
In that sense, I guess they're going off of the stereotype of Japanese people as tourists.
Yes.
But they just kind of looked like they were event photographers, so it didn't really land.
Yeah, like, he tries to interview them, they don't really speak English, and one guy just laughs when he talks to him, and Yokozuna, number one.
Yeah.
Yada yada.
Yeah.
Like, just such a weird racist bit.
It definitely stunk of McMahon.
Yeah. Oh, let's go to match number four. It's Razor Ramon versus Bob Backlund.
What an odd match.
Yeah. Again, Razor versus Macho would have been good.
Yeah.
The problem, and I found this out later, apparently Razor Ramon is hurt.
Really?
And that's why this match goes 2.5 minutes.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
Backlund offers a handshake, so Razor throws his toothpick at him. Razor,
can we talk about how good Scott Hall looks, though?
I think a tiny bit of it is by comparison. He still looks great, though.
He is hunky. He is tan. He is jacked. He is charismatic.
He is long, tan, and handsome.
He's hunky. He's hot.
The two lock up and keep pushing each other until Backlund keeps tripping up Razor. Razor slams Bob twice and hits some punches and stomps. On commentary, Bobby Heenan mentions that Bret Hart got attacked by Lex Luger at the WrestleMania brunch.
Yeah, they don't do the WrestleMania brunch anymore, do they?
No, they are doing it this year.
Are they?
Yes.
Why don't we have tickets?
Well, we were talking about how, like, they're going to be some superstars. I'm like, who the fuck? Like, whoever works that's going to be so fucking tired and not want to actually...
True.
Do anything.
WrestleMania.
Because it's either the night after the Hall of Fame or the night after night one. And I'm like, it was also weirdly expensive, but there is a WrestleMania brunch. I'm like,
WrestleMania brunch seems so up our alley. We love brunch.
This WrestleMania brunch was more of like a press conference as opposed to an actual brunch.
Like this one in 93 or this one in 24?
This one in 93 was more of a press conference.
Okay.
In the match, Backlund powers up and hits a double underhook suplex and then a delayed atomic drop inside cradle, and Razor Ramon wins. 2.5 minutes. What?
I mean, made Razor Ramon look good.
Yeah, like, this is also a weirdly clean loss for Bob Backlund. Like, it might be his first. Like, it's one of maybe 5 times it's happened up to this point. It's rare for Bob Backlund to lose clean like that.
Yeah?
It's usually shenanigans. So, he was also gone for a lot of years.
So, was this a return for him? I thought you said something along those lines when we were watching.
I mean, he would have been probably coming back right around this time. Okay. I think he showed up in the Rumble for a bit, but... I mean, he's not super been around yet. I know this does lead to a little bit of a prolonged run for him, so.
He doesn't have the it factor, which is, I know, hard to say because he is such like a mainstay in early days of WWE, but like, he doesn't.
I think he does once he turns heel. You've not seen a lot of it, but him being a crazy old man heel is great.
If you say so.
Yeah, but this match was weirdly short and... Yeah, it's because Razor's hurt. And
It didn't seem like he was hurt. So I guess kudos to him.
Yeah, I mean, in commentary, they didn't seem to hide this up. It's like, oh, there's this big feud, so.
No.
Yeah, no, we're not in the era of video packages yet.
No.
The most you get is, here's some clips during your interview.
Yeah, it's just clips of Raw. It's not like a video package.
Well, Raw actually would have been just debuted in January as well. So any clips old on that would have been like superstars or pay-per-views.
Yeah, okay.
Let's go backstage. It's Mean Gene. He's here with Money Inc., IRS, and Ted DiBiase. An ironic pairing in hindsight.
Money. Yeah, this is irony. This is just irony.
I'm a little disappointed. IRS does not mention tax cheats once in this promo.
But Ted DiBiase has the line of, how do you bankrupt a company with an unlimited credit line?
But Gene throws to a clip of Money Inc. breaking Brutus Beefcake's face. In reality, he had like a massive like accident and had to get like facial reconstruction surgery. So,
oh jeez,
he was gone for a while. I think it was. I want to say it was like someone was parasailing and like he like got hit by just a random accident. Like, mine's own business. Like, somebody collided in them and, like, fucked them up.
That's wild. Like, very freak accident.
Yeah. So, he's back from that, and they're like, oh, totally injured.
But he was wearing a mask, too. Yes. So, I guess that's why.
That's where DiBiase has the oops line. IRS mentions that Hulk Hogan had a little accident last night, and they claim that money can buy certain things.
Implying that they set up a hit on Hogan.
Yes. Hogan does have this same line later.
Yes.
Like, word for word.
Yeah, so they do, like, this is their story, and they're sticking to it, brother. Is it the true story? Probably not.
Yeah, because before we get into the actual match, let's talk about Hogan's black eye a little bit.
It's gnarly.
Yeah, it's not good. Hogan's claim is that basically a jet ski hit him in the face. I'm like, what?
We didn't say that on the show.
No. I mean, that's what he said since in, like, shoot interviews.
Okay, but we know that he is a, you know, pathological liar.
The story people want to believe, which doesn't have as much, like, credibility to people telling the story, is that there was a dispute about Randy Savage's marriage, and Hogan was inserting himself into it, and Macho punched him in the eye.
See, I believe
which that. I want that one to be true. But
I believe that.
It's never been confirmed. You can't believe Hulk Hogan, and Randy has died.
He's passed,
so.
Yeah. So he can't really corroborate the story.
Yeah.
I guess we'll never know. Watch it be like he fell down the stairs or something. Like something really lame.
But our next match, one of our main advertised matches, it's Money Inc. versus the Mega Maniacs.
Hulk Hogan and
Brutus Beefcake.
I don't like that name.
Why not?
Mega Maniacs? That's like... That's almost too generic.
No, it's been pointed out that, like, every Hulk Hogan team is, like, just themed around Hulk Hogan.
Yes. And it's something else. Maniacs. Yeah. He is the main character in his own eyes.
And Emily, who is their manager?
Oh, Jimmy Hart, of course.
Yeah, your boy.
I didn't write that down.
But this is for the tag team titles. Yeah, Hogan has his black eye for his big return, because this is Hogan's first match back. I don't even know if he would have been on Raw before this.
Oh, wow.
And Brutus Beefcake has a protective face covering.
Yeah, they're neither of them are in their best showing, are they?
Hogan is also on an off cycle here.
Mm.
They've been snooping around. Soon, 70 Man will have something to complain about in 2001.
Jesus.
Somewhat related to that, to this day, I've never really gotten why that one interview on the Arsenio Hall show is like, oh, that changed everything.
Yeah, we watched that interview, didn't we?
I don't know that we did, but it's just like, he lied. He lied on television.
He lied and he got caught. And that's what spiraled everything into, you know, what it became.
So he gets asked on there, are you taking steroids? And he says no. And do you know what the Hulk Hogan reasoning for saying no was?
Hmm.
He's like, well, am I actively taking steroids at this very second when being asked the question? No.
No, I'm not lying.
I didn't lie. I was selective. Like, fuck you, Terry.
Yeah, that sounds very Hulk Hogan of him.
So the faces get attacked mid-entrance, but they fight off the heels while their theme music plays. Sorry, while Hogan's theme music plays.
Yeah. The music doesn't stop.
Yeah, they clue the ring, and then they do a whole bunch of taunting. Music finally stops. Match actually starts. Money Inc. work over Beefcake until DiBiase hits the protective mask and hurts himself. And they do a basically similar spot for head slamming in the corner.
Yeah.
Hogan tags in, hits a 10-punch spot, and then threatens the referee. Why?
He's a face.
Again, why?
That's what they do.
Like, he does it again, like, right after. That's, I'm like, why?
What faces do.
They keep beating down DiBiase, and Hogan clears the ring. He does poke IRS in the eye in the process. I'm like, again, Terry, you're a face.
You know, everybody in America loves him as he pokes people in the eye.
Money Inc. go to leave, so referee Earl Hebner is like, well, okay, if you get counted out, now you lose the titles. Like, what?
Earl Hebner did not come up with that rule, and you know it.
In kayfabe, they say the referee has decided.
That sounds like the referee had somebody that was in the ring whispering in his ear.
Wait, you're telling me Hulk Hogan would change a finish in the ring?
On the fly, yes.
I don't know about that. I can't think of any examples from 1997 that would heavily have that happen.
Yeah. It didn't make any sense, and you even cited, like, you know who should be really fucking pissed? Tatanka.
Yeah! He's in his Tatanka truck right now going, what the fuck?
Stop with the fucking Tatanka truck.
The heels are actively getting screwed here. Yeah, so now if Money Inc. get counted out, they will lose the titles. Bobby Heenan points out how dumb this is, and I'm like, yes, thank you.
Yes, if Bobby is as mad as we are, you know y'all fucked up.
Yeah, well, did we just establish recently, like, yeah, we agree with Bobby Heenan about
we do agree with Bobby Heenan at all points. We agree with Bobby Heenan in 2000, though. Yeah. 93 is a different Bobby.
to add to it, like, you count out, you lose. Ready? 1, 2, 3, 4. They cheat.
Yeah, they are going quick.
So the heels finally cheat to beat down Hogan and choke him with the tag rope. They just keep choking him. Like, he does not want to take a bump here.
No, but they keep going to that same spot over and over and over again. This is the point where the match got real boring.
Ted DiBiase then locks in the $1 million dream, and Hogan starts to go down. But would you believe it? On the third arm drop, he hulks up, but then like, no, oh, he's actually back down.
Yeah. Again, they didn't really like, they kept doing the same spot repetitively. It was boring.
And then in a backwards spot here, IRS distracts the ref for some reason. So Brutus Beefcake can come in the ring to cheat and break up the hold.
You tell me that it's weird that the faces are cheating?
And then he locks in a sleeper on DiBiase and both men are down. Like, oh. And then an even weirder spot, the referee is doing the, like, all right, you're both down, you need to get up by a 10 count. Hulk Hogan does an Undertaker sit-up.
Yes, he does.
He does it at 8. He's not up, by the way. He's just like, nope, that's fine. And they just stop the count. That, like, counts. What the fuck?
Everybody's just stealing everybody's moves in this WrestleMania. It's kind of weird.
We get a hot tag to Beefcake, and, like, he's a move in. The crowd's like, eh. And they just die out. I'm like, yeah. Oh, wow. They want Hogan, and that's kind of it. DiBiase stops the comeback with a briefcase shot, and they start working over Beefcake some more. And I'm like, yeah, you're not getting the big home run tag here.
No.
Teddy DiBiase then tries to take the mask off of Beefcake and eventually gets it off. And they start working over the face of the barber. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, they even call that out on commentary, working over the face. Like, Jesus. How do you work over the face? You punch it once. It's worked.
Brutus Beefcake dodges a double clothesline and hits one of his own. He locks in a sleeper on IRS, and Hogan tries to go in, but is stopped by the ref. DiBiase breaks the hold and bumps the ref in the process. They do a hot tag spot with the ref down, and I'm like, that's weird. Like,
yeah, so like, what's the point of the tag?
Yeah. Especially with the heels, like, oh, well, ref's down. I got to get on the apron.
Right.
Like, felt really structured for Hulk Hogan to get his little moment.
But Hulk Hogan needed to have as many little moments as possible.
So Hogan tags in, big boot. Hogan hits both men with the reinforced mask of Brutus Beefcake.
Yeah, reinforced?
I don't know, man. Like, it's titanium. So they go for a double pin, and Jimmy Hart suddenly takes off his jacket and reverses it to reveal a referee jacket.
I loved that move.
It's a heel move.
Let it go. We know that Hogan is a face heel. It's okay.
So Jimmy Hart is now wearing a ref jacket, counts the pin, and is like, yep, you're the champions now.
Yes. He believes his own gimmick. He fully has faith in himself.
Another referee comes down to go,
no.
That's not how the world works, Jimmy.
But the fact that he thought it would so hard that he had a custom jacket made to be that swerve reveal, I'm the ref now. Like, he had that shit tailored.
Yeah, so the referee DQs the Mega Maniac, so they threaten to beat him up for it. And I'm like, okay, you broke the rules, sir. So they clear Money Inc. from the ring and threaten the ref again, but instead Jimmy Hart throws him out of the ring. Hogan, mostly, and Beefcake a little, celebrate like they won for way too long.
And the audience is into it. They're egging it on.
Holy shit, it's still going.
Yeah.
Then they get Money Inc.'s briefcase and find a brick, tax papers, and cash, and Hogan hands some cash out to ringside.
Turns out it's real cash.
Yeah, insert a joke about having to pay people to cheer for him.
No, they were cheering for him before he paid. No, that this crowd was way too hot for Hogan, and I did not understand.
So there is a little bit of a theory about that for this crowd. I was reading the kind of notes about the show. The show's in Las Vegas, and I mean, I did sell 13,000 tickets like before the week of, but it might just be a lot of casual people like, hey, I'm in Vegas. What the hell?
Why not? Probably.
Or I'm going to Vegas during this week. Let's get tickets to that. Like,
yeah.
People who aren't watching the show week to week, and they're like, oh, I remember Hogan. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you're probably right.
Thoughts on this actual match?
No, I didn't care. I didn't like it. I don't like Hulk Hogan. This was a boring match to me. I had no interest in paying attention to it. There was nothing in it that was keeping me interested in paying attention to it. So, no. And the rule change in the middle was fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Offensive. It was bad. Yeah. The fact that people were cheering for it, I felt like they were gaslighting me almost. Like, no, it was a good match. Yes, you loved it. No, I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's heels getting their comeuppance, but like,
I don't care.
Yeah. Like, you need someone official to kind of do that. Like, I've seen that happen before where it's like, okay, no, you're taking the coward's way out. No, like, you go finish this match.
The problem is it wasn't the heels getting their comeuppance, though. It was just, I'm Hulk Hogan, glory.
Yeah.
That's it. That's why I can't stand watching Hulk Hogan matches. It literally does not matter what the story is. The story is, I'm Hulk Hogan, love me.
And cheating's so cool, isn't it, gang?
It literally does not matter what is going on going into the match. Yeah.
This was a stupid as fuck ending.
I'm not even mad at the ending. I'm mad at the rule change.
I'm mad at both, because it's basically, how can we have Hulk Hogan win this match without having to be sullied with the disgusting tag titles?
I think it was insane how much of an applause they got at the end.
Yeah.
They lost.
He's here for like 10 minutes, it feels like.
It really does feel like that. And this is one of those matches that I actually timed because I knew the timestamp. So I had a timer running on my phone while this was going. It's like, how much time do I have left? It's the only thing that motivates me through some of these matches sometimes.
In the crowd, Todd Pettengill is here with Natalie Cole, who I don't know.
She is the daughter of Nat King Cole, the pianist.
So he asks her about the money. She goes, oh my God, it's real money. It's like, did you get any? Like, they focus on this money conversation for a while and like nothing else. And, like,
I think they were trying to highlight, like, it's real. Isn't Hulk Hogan so generous?
Yes. And then...
isn't he so charitable? Don't you love him?
Todd Pettengill goes over to the CEO of Caesars. I did not note this man's name because I did not give a shit.
This guy talked a lot.
Yeah, he's trying to sell. Isn't it great to be at Caesars, yada, yada. Can I get my room comped? We'll work something out.
But isn't it great to be here?
It's been great, yada, yada.
He never stops. He like barely stops to take a breath.
We get Mean Gene backstage with Mr. Perfect. And I don't know what it is, man. I kept writing Kurt Hennig. I could not stop.
Oh, I wrote Kurt for the entirety of it.
Gene asks about the knockouts that Lex Luger has been doing. And Mr. Perfect cuts a decent little promo. Right up until the end, and it's like, I'm gonna deal with the Lex Luger. It's like, oh no!
But it was funny. Like, he laughed at himself. Yeah. Gene laughed at him, and he's like, I'm gonna go beat him up.
I did laugh at Gene going like, "Don't go anywhere, though. I want to go to the tables with you." Because who better than Mr. Perfect?
It was really funny.
Maybe Canyon.
Who better? I like when wrestlers that are so like hyped up on their own, you know, supply basically. They fuck up and they laugh at themselves. Yeah. I love that.
Let's go to that match. It's the narcissist, Lex Luger versus Mr. Perfect.
I will say, Lex Luger is looking good. Like, in 2000, when he does the stupid little muscle spot, I think he looks icky. I think it's an icky look. But here he looks good. All right. It looks more real. I know it's not, but it looks more real.
Luger has some ladies with him, and he has the ladies hold up mirrors that, like, have pyro for the big finish. But it's so windy, the pyro is just blowing in this one girl's face the whole time.
But you know what? Isn't it a nice change of pace to have the ladies that are with Lex Luger have a purpose?
I mean, was their purpose also the butt? Because damn, the outfit they had.
They're given a lot more than Liz ever did.
So the babes are leaving as Mr. Perfect makes his entrance. And there's a little look of like, hey.
Those girls looked good.
He's perfect. Match starts, they trade wrist locks. Perfect hits a punch to the stomach and a high knee and then a drop kick. Luger hits strikes and beats down Perfect, but Perfect catches a big boot and hits a knee breaker. Perfect keeps working over the legs of Luger and locks in a spinning toe hold. Also hits a hard chop in the corner, and the crowd like really wakes up for that.
I don't know what it is, but yeah.
Maybe they turn to the mic or what, but like, here's the chop, and everyone's like, hey!
But I think this is the match where they were doing the chops, and I was like, you're not wooing. That's weird. It's weird that you're not wooing.
I'm wondering if it's this match. Perfect's the one who sent Flair packing, so is it, like, weird to woo for the chop when you were just feuding with the guy?
But you even just said, like, this is not a audience of, like, week-to-week watchers. They don't necessarily know all the politics behind it. They just know chop, Ric Flair, woo!
Luger throws Perfect into the corner hard and then works over the lower back of Perfect, including a backbreaker. Luger gets caught with his feet on the ropes for a pin, but hits a power slam after. And we get a sunset flip, but Luger kicks out and backs Perfect into the corner on a sleeper. Perfect hits a catapult into the top turnbuckle and hits strikes to Lex noises.
Oh my God, Lex's selling in this whole match was incredible. The noises that he was making, he was selling like his heart depended on it.
Perfect goes for a 10-punch spot, but Lex counters, and then Perfect counters that and hits a clothesline and a swinging neckbreaker. He hits a diving dropkick and goes for a backslide, but Luger counters it and gets the backslide pin with Perfect's feet on the rope, so the pin should not have counted.
Yeah, I thought that was the thing.
Yeah, it just the ref missed it. Okay. That's the story. Because Perfect kind of gets up to go, hey, wait a minute, I had my feet on the ropes, and Lex knocks him out with his steel-reinforced forearm.
Yeah, I guess he got surgery on his arm.
I forget if it's steel or titanium or whatever, but...
Whatever. Yeah, weaponized forearm.
He's been knocking people out with the surgically repaired forearm.
If I ever have to get surgery on my wrist and I get a bar put in my wrist, you bet your ass I'm coming at you. Reinforced steel!
I'll sell it.
Yeah, you better.
Be out for 3 days. You'd be like, Nick, get up. You have to go to work.
Nick, please. The bills are due.
So, Perfect gets up, storms to the back, and in the back, Perfect attacks Luger, who was talking to Shawn Michaels. So, Michaels attacks Perfect, and that sets up a feud for upcoming.
Shawn Michaels does not even, like, hesitate. He's like, oh, you, fuck you.
Yeah.
Like, no questions asked.
Like, really takes it to a level that was not necessary based on that, but...
Yeah, it was very out of nowhere, almost. He was still hyped up from his match. Like, I'll fight you. I'll take you.
Thoughts on this match?
I didn't think it was that bad. I liked it. I thought it was fun.
It was kind of boring.
If you think this is boring?
I thought it was kind of boring, but not aggressively boring.
Let me remind you of the match that we just watched.
I thought it at least had some energy.
Did it?
I don't know. The actual in-ring...
Is the energy in the room with us?
I did know. I'm like, this show is dragging.
The next match is what was getting me through it all.
Not even the match, just... All right, let's just fucking get to it.
Bird!
Gorilla Monsoon is on the stage and sets up The Undertaker versus Gonzalez. Also hypes up Brett versus Yoko. And throws back to Fink.
I'm sorry, who?
Sorry, Finkus Maximus.
Thank you.
Giant Gonzalez comes out.
In that outfit. In
state of your outfit.
That outfit. That bodysuit, like, haunts me in my dreams. I will remember this outfit for the rest of my life.
Emily, is this... a better or worse version than when he has the fur on, like, covering certain parts?
Like, the non-screen printed fur?
Like, actual fur.
No, this is worse.
Oh, I don't know.
No, this is worse. This is lazy bad.
I didn't realize they do this match at SummerSlam, too. I'm like, Jesus, guys.
Why? Giant Gonzalez, why the fuck are you here?
So they claim he's 8 foot tall. He's 7'7", apparently.
That's okay. You're not that far.
Oh, yeah. He's very tall, but...
I have such a hard time. Like, I don't like big guy wrestle. You know this.
Yes.
It's so difficult, though, because I recognize how important Andre the Giant is to wrestling as a whole. I recognize his importance, and I do not want to downplay his importance. That being said, because we had Andre the Giant, we have Giant Gonzalez, we have the Big Show, we have the Great Khali, we had Omos. What have we gotten that is not Andre the Giant?
You put me in a spot where I have to defend Big Show in that list.
Oh, of this list, he's absolutely the best.
Yeah. Andre is just, he's from a bygone era that it just doesn't work now. It worked when he was... Here's this massive guy you're going to see once.
Yes.
And back then, he could also actually still, like, move. Like,
sure.
You know, most of his WWF run, he is struggling.
I know. But, and that's like, I know how important he is. I know how much of an icon he is. But because of him, we have Giant Gonzalez.
Yeah. Giant Gonzalez is struggling in a very different sense.
Yeah. I mean, fucking Great Khali was way too long-lived on the roster. Omos was too long lived on the roster.
You're gonna upset all the Homo sapiens.
I don't care. This is an Omos hate account. If there's two things I am, is an Omos hater and a Liz hater. Sorry.
And a Hogan hater. And
if there's two things I will forever stand by, it's those two.
So Emily, let's talk about the Undertaker's entrance.
Bird.
Now, I feel like you've been saying it's a crow.
I think I just knew it was a big black bird.
It's a vulture.
It is a vulture, which makes way more sense with the dead thing.
Yeah, fortunately, you were saying, in terms of your lore of the Legion, the dungeon, and all that, it was Sting's crow, which is a confirmed crow.
That is 100% a crow. A vulture would never go on top of the barn. Are you kidding?
It will give you the floor to say whatever you want to say about the bird.
So here's the thing. In the grand scheme of the show, this entrance is dwarfed by the introduction.
Wow.
I know. The intro to this WrestleMania dwarfed this entrance.
Do you think any part of that is because it's daylight? And it's weird for the Undertaker to come out in daylight?
No, because I loved this intro before I saw because I loved this entrance before I saw the intro.
Fair. Admittedly, the green smoke is doing a lot of heavy lifting for atmosphere.
Oh, my God. The colored smoke. I don't want to say nice things about him, but they did the red smoke for Hogan's entrance, and that did a lot. I love that. I love the color element to it. So the Undertaker comes out in a green smoke, and he is also on a fucking chariot with the Vulture. It's cool. When you don't have to walk to the ring, you are powerful. You are cool. I love that shit. Still is cool. It's still a very cool entrance. Do not get me wrong. It's still one of my, like, probably my favorite Undertaker entrance still to this day.
I think you missed a little bit of a trick not having a pale horse taking the chariot.
Yeah, probably. It was just, it was guys. It was more Egyptian Roman guys. Yeah. They looked very stoic and very deadly. It was kind of like a Egyptian burial kind of vibe.
I also feel like you could have done something with I was going to say you do something like, do something like mummified. And I'm like, the Yeti. Which,
let me introduce you.
Which, by the way, that was going to be Giant Gonzalez at one point. It was going to get unmasked to be Giant Gonzalez. And then
they didn't continue on with the Yeti.
No, I'm saying that also. But they didn't end up actually signing him. So they... They had a different big wrestler. They were going to swap it at some point.
Sure.
And then they turned him into Super Giant Ninja.
Of course they did.
Yeah.
So we have this whole theme going on with the show. This could have, we could have added to the theme even more than we already did with this Undertaker entrance. So he's coming out on a chariot, being hoisted by these Roman Egyptian men. I guess it's Roman, right? Caesar's Roman.
Yeah.
So Roman. But both those cultures have very intricate death ceremonies. So we could have had elements of a Roman death ceremony in the Undertaker's entrance. The man's undead. He's got a guy holding his urn. There could have been something here. We could have had a Roman burial of the Undertaker.
There's one problem with this. You're counting on people being cultured.
They're all in costume. They can figure it out.
What a party city.
It was great. If that's all it takes, I don't mind.
So we should know, Undertaker has pallbearer. Giant Gonzalez has Harvey Whippleman.
Harvey Whippleman doesn't really come into play much, though.
He comes in a little bit. We're going to mention them once or twice, so it don't have that come out of nowhere.
Listeners, this match ain't about the wrestling. It never has been. It never will be. I don't love this match for the wrestling. I don't love this show for the wrestling. We know this. I want this to be put out there. I'm not here for the wrestling.
I'm realizing now, the pay-per-view and this match have the same arc.
What do
you
mean?
Just care about the start, and then Correct. Once it's done, you're like...
out. Correct.
Don't care about the rest of it.
Hook me with a theme, and I'll stick it out for the 8 minutes that this match went.
Was it that short?
I think so, yeah.
Oh my god, you fooled me. Gonzalez hits strikes, but Taker keeps getting up. Taker hits strikes, and Gonzalez wobbles. That's all he knows how to do. What's his favorite song, Emily?
Wobble baby. He and Yokozuna went to the same school.
Okay, Yoko only does that once.
Does he? Are you sure? I think he wobbled more than once.
No, Yokozuna can wrestle.
I don't think that's true.
Giant Gonzalez. Well, because he'll get punched and then like crunch his hands up. Like,
wait, Yokozuna or Gonzalez?
Gonzalez. Dude, you don't even have to take bumps. You just have to know how to sell a punch, and you can't even do that.
No, he cannot.
Also, you've wrestled before. It's not like... like, Great Khali, they just found a big dude, and they're like, hey, come fucking beat up the Undertaker.
You gotta be a star, kid.
Yeah. This guy, was a wrestler. What the fuck?
Where?
Well, it was El Gigante, so I guess Mexico.
Mexico usually is so much better than that.
They choke each other. Taker uses the ropes for leverage, and he climbs up to, get leverage on him. They get a low blow to Undertaker. I'm like, DQ?
He's also undead. He shouldn't be able to feel that.
Different circumstances.
You want to talk about the Kane physics of it all?
I'm thinking of Kane, where he's looking at Playboy in, 2003. He's like, just because my face is burnt doesn't mean the rest of me is.
Good lord.
I never thought about Kane can't feel pain.
Can
he feel anything? He just
can't. I don't think he can feel anything. So why is he masturbating?
He's just going, I can't feel anything. God damn it.
Oh, that's so sad.
Oh, that gives whole new meaning to his pyro when he brings the arms up and down and there's the big explosion. That's all he gets.
Oh, that's the only release he has.
Christ.
This is really...
old school to Giant Gonzalez, but he stays on his feet and throws Taker around. Sleeper to the Undertaker, and we slow things down, which... we're grading on a curve here.
Yeah, seriously.
Paul Bearer holds up the urn so Taker powers up, but he's thrown out of the ring. Gonzalez throws Taker around ringside, but Taker manages to get back in the ring before the count of 10. Headbutts the Undertaker, and Taker sits up and then won't go down. Undertaker hits a flurry of strikes, sending Gonzalez to one knee, and Harvey Whippleman gets on the apron. Taker, like, knocks him off, but apparently he hands Giant Gonzalez a rag at some point. This is not set up beforehand.
No.
Because suddenly, Giant Gonzalez is using a rag on the Undertaker's face, and commentary's like, oh my god, that smells so bad, it smells like chloroform. And I'm like, can you?
First of all, how do you know what chloroform smells like?
Yeah, you're not Jerry Lawler.
Second, it's not that strong.
Yeah, but like the way they're smelling it, like they're about to pass out.
Yeah, seriously.
Also, it's an outdoor arena too, so you can't even be like, oh, it's enclosed.
No, their air is being circulated. But yeah, so Giant chloroforms Taker.
Yes.
Like, pardon?
Which the referee, after like 45 seconds, like, wait a second.
Hold on, something smells like chloroform.
And Taker wins commentary by DQ.
Commentary can smell the chloroform, but the referee cannot.
See, the Undertaker can. Yes, he can. He's dead. Yeah, so Undertaker wins by DQ. It's the one really fucky finish in the streak. Can
but
you
the
imagine?
The fact that he comes back, I think, saves it.
Can you imagine if the Undertaker didn't have his undefeated streak because he lost to Giant Gonzalez?
We would rewrite history.
Like, no, he totally won.
Like, somehow that match has, like, vanished. It's, I don't know.
Put a couple of tauntauns in front of it, the special edition. Ah!
There you go. But, so they put Undertaker on, like, a stretcher him out of the ring. It's all quiet for a couple minutes. And he does come back.
Well, before that, Giant Gonzalez is just walking in the ring. He does make a face turn in our eyes because he chokeslams Bill Alfonso.
Yeah, we didn't realize it was Bill Alfonso for a long time, but fucking ECW Whistleman is here.
Yeah, we thought we saw him earlier, too. I forget what match it was, but we like briefly saw him. Like, I think that's him.
But he's the referee for this match.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have the whistle, thank God. But he does get chokeslammed by Giant Gonzalez. So I was like, all right, okay.
He does whistleblow on Giant Gonzalez by calling for a DQ, though. So
I don't think that's whistleblowing. I don't think that's whistleblowing.
Gonzalez poses to Hogan chants and like, Christ.
Because they want Hogan to run out and like avenge The Undertaker, right?
The crowd is just, you know, just knows, oh, is there a big giant in the ring? Send for Hogan. So the gong rings and Taker runs to the ring, beats down Giant Gonzalez, hits two clotheslines, and then finally knocks Giant Gonzalez down with a jumping clothesline. And Gonzalez is brought to the back by armed security, and Undertaker has announced the winner.
So that is why the streak lives.
Well, the streak lives because he won by DQ.
But because he came back and he's still alive, I think that that is why we're allowing the streak to live. If he had been carted out, I don't know that that would, like, yes, it would have counted on paper, but I don't know that it would have been, like, accepted.
Oh, man, I've not seen one of the, like, going one by one through the streak in a while. I'm like, What the fuck do they put for this match? I know they put the bird, but I'm like, what else?
Yeah, the bird.
Is it literally just the bird and, like, a choke?
The bird. But another killer line from Randy on commentary. You're going to have to change Giant Gonzalez's name to What Happened. Huh? Beg pardon, Mr. Savage? The fuck you saying?
Oh, man. This match is awful.
Doesn't matter. It's great. I love it.
Yeah, this match is very bad.
It is a bad match.
As you would expect. Like, that's the one thing with some of the things in the show is like,
you don't expect Undertaker versus Giant Gonzalez to be a 5-star match.
Yeah.
No one has ever thought that.
I don't know that he expected it even be a 1-star match.
No. I wasn't expecting chloroform.
It was not terribly long. It was, you know.
It was just enough. It was just enough.
I know, we're defending. Like, it's like, I'm like, that's why I give it like -1 star as opposed to -5.
Right.
But
it was just enough.
That was some shit. So I do want to run us through the match finishes so far.
Oh my god.
This is where I want to get on my high horse.
This is the hill that Nick is going to die on.
So everybody, match number one ended in a weird count out.
Mm-hmm.
And match number two ended in a botched Frankensteiner. Mm-hmm. Match number three ended in the second doink and then weirdly delayed pin.
Okay.
Match number four had the 2.5-minute sudden inside cradle. Okay. Did not build to a finish at all. Match number five had the Jimmy Hart DQ. Match number six had the feet on the ropes missed. Match number 7 ended in a chloroform rag DQ. So that's where we're at. This is WrestleMania. It's the biggest show of the fucking year. And the only two clean finishes were fucked for different reasons.
But are you having fun?
No.
Liar. You liar. You're a lying liar. You're having a great time. I'm having a great time. Unironically, loving my life in this. I'm having a great time.
We get to Mean Gene throwing to a clip of Yokozuna killing Jim Duggan and Yoko attacking Brett at the contract signing. We then, for the main event, get Hulk Hogan being interviewed. That's strange.
Wonder why.
So he's here to get interviewed and speak on behalf of Brett, I guess.
Yeah, he's like, all the Hulkamaniacs are in Brett's corner.
No.
That's what he says.
Well, you know what else he says? Oh, well, Brett's a Hulkamaniac. It's like, oh, fuck.
Okay,
you,
well,
Terry.
He was saying that he's in Brett's corner with all of his Hulkamaniacs.
And did you catch his big tip for Bret Hart?
No.
You need to watch out for Mr. Fuji and Yokozuna.
No kidding. The guy that you're in a match with? What?
But I went into Brett's locker room and I looked in his eyes and it made me question the power of Hulkamania. And that's why I'm challenging the winner of this match, whether it be Bret Hart or that Jap brother.
Okay, Jesus Christ.
He hit it so hard.
He did.
And what you gonna do, yada yada.
Do you want to be a Hulkamaniac next?
I don't want to be a Hulkamaniac. I don't want to say hi to my family and friends.
I want to be a Hulkamaniac. Have fun with my family and friends.
Sorry, yes. Have fun. I don't want to have fun with any family or friends.
It's so fucking monotone. I love it.
Well, let's send the hoaxer to heaven. Oh, wait, shit, sorry. Before that, Todd Pattengill's in the crowd and interviews two guys in togas, and I did not get a word they fucking said.
They were so drunk, and they were definitely industry plans.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, we took the sheets off our bed.
Yeah.
I'm like, dude, the CEO of the hotel is here.
No, Todd Pattengill is like, where'd you get your togas? He was like, Motel 6! Like, they didn't stay at any of their resorts. They got it from the fucking motel down the street. It was funny. It was cute. But yeah, these were definitely like industry, you know, indie wrestlers in the area.
It is now time for our main event. It is the winner of the 1993 Royal Rumble, Yokozuna, with Mr. Fuji versus Bret Hart for the WWF title. This was the first year they did the winner of the Rumble gets title shot.
Wow. Okay.
The year before was for the title. And
oh, yes.
The 2 years before that, Hulk Hogan just won. And
because fuck you.
He was champion of one, not for the other, but he just got the title shot because he's Hulk Hogan for the 1 year.
I really hate how many times I've seen this match.
Yeah.
You've showed me this match probably no less than 4 times.
And what's been my reasoning?
I don't remember, but I know I've sat through this match multiple times. And I could not tell you why.
Well, match starts with Yoko sumo posing, and Brett hits a running dropkick. Brett tries for a waist lock, but can't reach around and gets shoulder tackled. Brett traps Yoko's leg in the ropes and hits a slingshot splash and a Brett's rope elbow drop. Brett tries to knock Yoko down, but eats a clothesline, and Yoko hits a leg drop on Brett, which prompts USA chants, you fucking idiots.
Even commentary was like, what are they yelling USA for?
No, Bobby hit him.
Maybe it was Bobby. Yeah.
Bobby's like, fucking these idiot fans. My note following that is, yes, Brett is Canadian. Why do you ask? Yoko locks in a nerve hold on Brett. Brett gets his foot up on a charge and jumps onto Yoko's back for a 2. Sidekick from Yokozuna and then another nerve hold to more USA chants. Brett dodges a corner attack and hits a second rope bulldog and a Brett's rope elbow again. Brett's rope clothesline and then a running clothesline actually knocks Yoko down for a second. And Yoko stops at a 10 punch spot. But as he's carrying Brett away, Brett pulls the turnbuckle pad off, leaving it exposed.
I'm sure that won't come into play.
Brett counters being smashed into it and smashes Yoko's head into the exposed turnbuckle, which I think somewhere around here, apparently they skip about 4 minutes of a match. I don't know what the hell they were going to do, but Brett has said that Yoko started the finish early.
Yeah, you said that he goes home early. I guess
I don't know where it would have been.
Yeah, I don't know where those extra 5 minutes would have been.
And honestly, I think the match is better off for not having him.
Oh, probably.
Because this actually isn't that bad.
All things considered, no. But if it had gone 5 minutes longer, probably would have been bad.
Yeah, so Yokozuna is laying face down. Brett grabs the legs and manages to lock in a sharpshooter in a nice kind of creative way. Mr. Fuji clearly missed the memo about them going home quickly because he has a spot here and like isn't setting up for it for a second and then has to very quickly grab his pocket sand and throws it in the eyes of Brett. And this is enough for Yokozuna to pin Bret Hart.
Yep.
new WWF champion,
Yokozuna.
And don't blink, because here's Hulk Hogan. What the fuck?
He bolted. Where did he come from? Where did he go? Where did he come from?
Mr. Fuji then offers a stupid challenge to Hogan, and for no reason is like, and the title will be on the line. And Hogan is helping Brett, and he's like, oh no, brother, I couldn't possibly go do that. Brett's like, no.
Yeah, like gives him his
blessing. Do it for the hockey.
Do it for the hockey? Do it for the Hulkamaniacs.
Yeah. Hulk Hogan having to pretend that he's not like, oh yeah, brother.
Yeah, no, totally.
Let me go win this real quick.
Yeah, it's like he's waiting for that blessing. No, he's not.
It's also here. When Mr. Fuji's offering the challenge, close up a Yoko fucking gassed.
Oh my god.
And during the match, Bobby Heenan's like, look, he's not even breathing heavy.
He didn't even break a sweat. Cut to a
close up of him like,
ugh. Yeah, no. No, you're not fooling anyone, my guy. It is just kind of sad.
So Brett tells Hogan to go fight. I'm like, oh, that man hated that moment. That probably broke
him in that moment.
Yoko holds Hogan for the sand, but it's the one thing they didn't want to happen.
What?
Punch to Fuji, clothesline to Yoko, leg drop pin, new champion Hulk Hogan.
Woo.
Fuck you, Terry.
He got what he wanted.
Sorry, my match note is, Jesus Christ, fuck you, Terry.
Tell me how you really feel, Nick.
Fuck you, Terry. And fuck you, Vince, you coward.
He wasn't even here. We can't even blame him.
No, he booked this. But fuck
he wasn't
you.
Outward. He wasn't here outwardly.
No, but
we can say fuck you to him for a lot of reasons.
Yes. Yeah, so in this moment, though, you fucking coward. In a match that literally no one paid for because it wasn't advertised.
Correct.
Hulk Hogan has now won the WWF title. In the upcoming weeks, he will call the belt a toy.
Oh, sick.
Yeah. He's like, no, I want the New Japan title. He will lose it a month later back to Yokozuna.
Oh.
So the original plan here, I guess I'll say, is original plan is he faces Yokozuna at King of the Ring, beats him, and then they do Hogan and Brett at SummerSlam.
Okay.
Hogan later decides, you're not in my league, brother.
To Brett?
Yep.
Jesus.
Like, there's like a photo shoot of them, like, with the belt, like, setting up the thing, and he's like, no, I don't want to lose. Mind. I don't want to lose to you, so no. So they do a weird, convoluted spot of a photographer gets on the apron and goes to take a photo of Hogan, but it has a fireball that shoots in his face.
And that injures him and takes him out of commission?
And yeah, and Yoko pins him and wins the title.
Sure.
And then Hogan doesn't return for 9 years.
Cool. Bummer. Sure we missed him.
Yeah. I will say, just for completion's sake, Yokozuna will then be a dominant heel champion and offer a body slam challenge on the USS Intrepid on the 4th of July.
Hell yeah, he does!
And who will succeed in that challenge but a newly face based on that segment, Lex Luger.
Hell yeah. If anyone can find that, please send it to me. We can't find it anymore. Or it was on the network, now it's gone.
Or let us know if it's actually still on the network. Like, if we got a VPN, we could watch it.
I just want to see the body slam competition on the USS whatever.
Intrepid.
On the USS Intrepid. That's all I want to see. That's all I want. I love it. That is my next pick for the Patreon, okay? If I can find it, we're watching it.
So, the two matches here. The Brett Yoko match is... It's better than the match
it's
before
possible,
it.
It's possible, yeah.
Better than Taker, Giant Gonzalez. It's nothing special. Their one next year isn't all that special either. This has the nice moment at the end, but yeah, Hogan coming in and winning. It's like fucking.
I mean, it's just very, you know, self-indulgent. Hulk Hogan is self-indulgent.
It's that, and it's Vince panicking, and it's Hulk Hogan knowing when to
play the cards.
Yeah, when to put a little pressure on the situation. Going, well, I don't know, brother. I don't think he's drawing.
Yeah. He's manipulative.
A fucking month later, he's gone. It's like, yep. Well.
Because he's manipulative.
Yeah. So, like, some good this did. Like, in your eyes, if you were asked, what is the main event of the show? Is it the Hogan match or is it the Brett match?
No, it's the Brett match, I would say.
Yeah, it's always been debated of, like, what is the WrestleMania main event of this show? And I know it's the Bird for you. But it's like, which one counts?
It's the advertised match is the main event.
Yeah.
Brett Yoko is the main event.
I do view it as a bundle where if you're talking about like worst WrestleMania main events, like it's a combo. You can't just look at just the Hogan match. It needs to be the whole thing.
I guess.
I don't know where this falls under the worst Mania main events because It look, there is the big fuck you at the end, but it's all short.
It, yeah, I think if it was longer and like more drawn out, it would be more egregious. It was quick.
And
it was 22 seconds.
The crowd's into it.
The crowd's so into and it. That's the crowd part is so of the problem. Hot. Probably physically too, because it's Las Vegas.
So yeah, it's definitely a weird crossroads of crowd that night loved it, but it kind of killed a lot of momentum you had going for building new people.
Yeah.
So Emily, thoughts on the wrestling part of this show?
I mean, I haven't made it a secret throughout this whole show. I'm not here for the wrestling. I'm not watching the show for the in-ring quality. It's not good. I mean, the show makes it easy to not be here for the in-ring quality.
Yeah, this is a rare show, or I guess rare WrestleMania, where I'm like, there's nothing to seek out on this show in terms of like, hey, here's a great match.
In terms of quality, no, but like for historical reasons, I would say the main event. Just like as a, like if you were a wrestling fan and you wanted to like, it's an important part of the history, I think.
I'd say it would go in a, like, you know, WrestleMania 2K showcase, but they managed to avoid that.
Well.
Yeah, I think safely, in-ring-wise, this is a bottom five WrestleMania.
In-ring-wise? So here's the problem with that. I don't necessarily wholeheartedly agree with that, because to me, the worst WrestleManias, the worst pay-per-views, the worst WWE shows, or WCW shows, are the forgettable ones, are the ones that you can't go back, you can't recall, you don't remember. This at least had something to remember, which makes it a little bit of a step, it's like a half step, but it's a step above.
Yeah, but I don't know, just because something's memorable doesn't mean it's good. I mean, to me, there's no rewatch value. I mean, outside of the introductions, I feel like if we rewatch some WWE shows that we have forgotten,
yeah,
we'd find, oh, hey, there's a good match here, or sure, this or that. Like, here, it's almost, I will remember to not rewatch this.
I think I disagree with you. I think I would sooner rewatch this than, like, December to Dismember, which we both agreed had a pseudo-good match on it. That match was passable. It was a fine match.
Ironically, it has the same fuck you, eat your vegetables finish as this show.
Yeah, well, I would sooner rewatch WrestleMania 9 than December to Dismember, which
that's not a high bar.
But to me, that makes WrestleMania better than that show, and that's a whole other conversation we can get into, is whether or not WrestleMania is better than some of the recent shows that we've watched. WrestleMania 29 kind of sucked, kind of forgettable.
That's a better one than this.
Forgettable though.
Has Punk and Undertaker.
So does December to Dismember.
Does not Undertaker.
Well, I had Punk.
Yeah.
Who did he face?
He was in the Extreme Elimination Chamber.
With who?
Main event.
Who fucking knows? Who cares?
Literally about to list them off. It's main event Bob Holly, Test, Big Show, Rob Van Dam.
See, I'm realizing in this moment that the match that I thought I was talking about was the WrestleMania 29 match. So, December to Dismember is worse than WrestleMania 9.
You also have a goldfish brain.
No, I'm not blaming this on goldfish brain.
But, I mean, in terms of most WrestleManias, I guess you have watched 29, but
I haven't watched a lot of WrestleManias.
You haven't watched a lot of them in context, or you've watched a lot of them like in totality, where I've showed you a match or two, but yeah, it's not.
I do kind of want to watch all the WrestleManias, though. Like, it's a weird goal of mine.
I think this show has one thing going for it, for better or worse. Both of us think better, but it's the theme.
The theme is the thing that'll keep me coming back to it, and the theme is the reason why I don't think this is a bottom five WrestleMania.
I'd love this theme to be on a different show, but there are some people that are like, oh no, this theme like makes it actively worse. No. I don't get that.
No, more themes in wrestling shows, please. I am all about a theme because it's something to centralize your show around. It's a point to come back to. If all else fails, as it did in this show, at least you have that theme.
I feel like they didn't come back to it. Like there's no themed gimmick matches or anything.
No, which is kind of shocking for WWE, especially in this era. But I mean, it had the entrances, it had the animals, it had the spectacle, it had the costuming. There's at least that.
You know, this feels like Madam Web, where it's like, why is it set in 2003? It's like, why is this...
Maybe, yeah.
Why is this, you know, Roman or Greek themed?
Oh, yeah, I should, like, out myself. I completely forgot about Greek mythology during the recording of this.
Yes, we had a few technical issues, so Emily gets a chance to, like, retract.
I just, like, for some reason in my head, I could not come up with Greek mythology. I could only think of Roman and Egyptian mythology. And this is not Egyptian. I was wrong.
Cleopatra, because...
Yeah, that might have been what got me, but this is Greek mythology. Like, Greek and Roman mythology, not Egyptian. Emily. But give me more themes in wrestling. Give me more shows with a theme like this.
Yeah, the main ones I can think of are the two WrestleMania Goes Hollywood ones.
But the more recent one definitely didn't go that deep into it. Which one did, like, the scenes that...
Actually, both of them, but I remember more of the 21 ones. I mean, maybe I just had more time to kind of watch them, but... I mean, I like the set better at 39 than 21.
The sets.
The 39 one is based at, like, the Oscar stage. It looks great.
Oh, yes, I do remember this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, admittedly...
It's not enough, though.
I think part of the problem... actually kind of stems from when they started going to the bigger arena, like the bigger like stadiums where, I mean, 29 had the bridge, but
the bridge that you can't decide that you were so adamant was not the like Brooklyn Bridge.
I thought it was the George Washington.
Even
it's
though
fine.
We looked up a picture.
I
of
thought
the
it was the
bridge.
One that, you know, connects to New Jersey.
Exactly. The
Sorry.
Brooklyn Bridge.
But I think, I mean, 34 has the cool Mardi Gras.
See, that
mask.
Could have been a fantastic theme. And I do think about that when I think of themes around WrestleManias. They didn't do anything with that.
Do you know how what they did like in the week leading up?
Mm-mm.
They had so much like street advertisement. Like Elias went into like a random club and like played some music. And was like, hey guys, WrestleMania.
See, that there's so much you can do around a Mardi Gras themed event. You could have had parades. You could have had somebody throwing beads. You could have had like... characters and costumes and someone coming out on stilts. It's a the whole point of Mardi Gras is spectacle. Like that it fits so well with what WrestleMania is, and it really bums me out that they didn't do anything with it.
I think 40 is just going to be a big Liberty Bell.
That's not a theme. Philadelphia is not a theme.
The bell. Get your Baja Blast.
Oh my god. No, I'm going to have to buy a Prime at WrestleMania 40, and I'm trying to come to peace with that.
No, you're going to do it on the podcast episode.
But I feel like if somebody's handing out Prime samples, I'll take it. I don't think I want to pay for a Prime. All in all, my thoughts are the show was a bad wrestling show, which is what it should be, is a wrestling show.
Yes.
It was a bad wrestling show. However, it was entertaining as hell. And that gives it at least something.
And for me, I think the fact that the majority of the matches are garbage and dull and have fucked finishes... And it doesn't make me want to go back and rewatch this show.
I would sooner rewatch this than some other shows we've watched.
Well, Emily, don't worry. You'll probably have plenty more of those shows you never want to rewatch coming forward.
Oh, I'm sure.
Maybe even next episode. Mm. Well, let's wind this down. Emily, let's go into best bit, worst bit, and MVP. Your best bit.
I'm giving it to the intro.
I'm actually going to do the same.
Yeah? The camel, the ostrich, the chaise, the Vestal Virgins?
Yeah, in terms of presentation, it's like, yeah, it is good presentation there.
Yes.
And there's nothing in this show worth giving best bit to, so yeah.
I mean, I had to decide.
Emily, what is your worst bit?
The Hogan tag match.
Hogan tag match?
Yeah.
Okay.
Fuck that.
I'm doing Hogan swooping into the main event.
No, because the Hogan tag match was more offensive. It was like, it was one of those moments where like, you think I'm stupid. They're changing the rules in the middle of the match. Like, don't insult my intelligence.
The changing the rules, you know, it's him pulling rank, more or less. It's not him stealing something away from somebody who works hard.
Yeah, true.
And Emily, who is your MVP?
Because I had to give it to him somewhere. Undertaker and his bird.
Do you want to just give it to the bird?
I thought you'd get mad at me if I did that.
I already typed it into the spreadsheet.
Yes, I want to give it to the bird.
Okay, the vulture.
The reason that I wanted to watch this show.
Emily, you want to guess who my MVP is?
Hulk Hogan.
You want to think of an actual guess?
Bret Hart?
Yeah.
For doing his damn job?
Bret got a decent match in Yokozuna and then had to... Like, yeah. Had to hold back every instinct in his body to be like, yes, Hulk, you take the moment I really want in my life.
Honorable mention, I think I would give it to JR. I mean, it was his debut. He held his own.
Yeah.
He did pretty well amongst the, you know, garbage that was working with Randy Savage on commentary.
Minus points for not calling anybody a son of a bitch.
It was his first day. You don't call someone a son of a bitch on your first day.
You might. But that's going to do it for WrestleMania 9. I think both of us can just be like, you know what? We'll watch the intros at some point and never watch any other part of the show.
I think I agree. Because we've definitely watched that Yokozuna match far too many times.
Next up is Sold Out, a show that I've psyched myself out of.
You were so hype.
Yeah, I was hyped to torture you, and then I went, fuck, I gotta take notes. I gotta run us through this piece
of garbage.
It
really does ruin it, doesn't it?
Hey, this show has a theme. It's the NWO. You should love it, because the theme is a theme.
No.
They enter on a garbage truck.
That's not a theme.
That's not poetic at all. But until Sold Out, you can listen to all of our back catalog on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, Samsung Podcasts, Deezer, and iHeartRadio. You can follow us on social media, most of them at Butts in the Pod, Facebook, the Butts and Seats Podcast. And you can listen to the previously mentioned WrestleMania 29 or our upcoming episode 100 runner-up of Heroes of Wrestling. We'll be over on the Patreon soon.
$5 a month gets you a new episode, an extra new episode every month. And, you know, whatever other fun, stupid stuff you want to put over there.
Yeah, they're still guaranteed one a month. It's one every 3 weeks, but so some months you'll get two.
Wow, it's totally worth the money.
Yeah, Heroes Wrestling will be episode number 11 over there, so.
Yeah, there's a good amount over there at this
point.
Yeah,
there's already 10% of our main catalog.
Jeez.
Emily, any closing thoughts before we shut the door on WrestleMania 9?
Thank you for suffering through it. This was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun. I know you didn't.
Oh, God. Fuck you, Terry.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure if you wrestled in the next show, I'm being totally honest.
That's fine.
But until we inspect some grain, I'm
Hell
Nick.
Yeah. I'm Emily.
And thanks for listening to the Butts and Seats Podcast.
Bye.